So one day, you know, was kind of just swiping through. And I saw this nice guy in a suit that was in real estate. He was the owner of his own company. And he was a pilot. He was also very religious. So yeah, of course I was interested. I think you like swipe right or something, and we must have both swiped right.
The first night that we talked like 3 hours. And we hit on all cylinders. There were times that he was like the perfect partner.
Good night, Gibby. You make me crazy, and I'm crazy about you.
And I love you. I really, honest to God, love you.
Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. This is Jim Clementi, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor, and writer-producer on CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Laura Richards, criminal behavioral analyst, former New Scotland Yard, and founder of Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service.
And I'm Lisa Zambetti. I'm the casting director for CBS's Criminal Minds. And I'm so excited we're starting a brand new case today, a case that has so many victims and is a real cautionary tale for a lot of our listeners, I think. We'll really get a lot out of this one.
Absolutely. Certainly a lot of learning, but I would say survivors rather than victims on this one. And that's really what makes it unique in the true crime genre. And I was so pleased to watch something that's empowering and uplifting.
Yeah.
So this is a new Showtime 4-part docuseries called Love Fraud. And you have to watch it. You really do. I mean, we will cover it and we'll break it down. But I mean, Jim, there's a lot of psychology here on both sides, isn't there? A lot of behavioral analysis. And I'm sure, Lisa, you've got plenty to say about the format and structure and just some of the people that appear in it. But it's Rachel Grady and Heidi Ewing. This is the two female directors, which I'm cheering because this is quite the masterclass. What did you think, Jim?
Yeah, I thought it was incredibly well done. Not only did they delve into a story sort of in a way that just kept bringing you deeper and deeper, but they showed how broad a spectrum the behavior of the offender was and how he expertly manipulated each woman. And I believe taking advantage of each survivor's personality and lifestyle and vulnerabilities. So I think he was a practiced manipulator, something that he started from an extremely young age. And I can't wait to dive into all the nuances of that. Lisa, what did you think about the documentary series?
Oh, yeah. This is one of the most extraordinarily structured films that I've seen in a long time. And their use of transitions and interstitials and setting the mood. And really, I loved how they just really kind of waited in silence with a lot of the people that they were talking to, which showed a lot about their personalities, just watching them think without even speaking. Yeah. But this documentary is full, I'm going to call them characters. They're, of course, real people, but they're some of the most colorful characters, strong female role models, I'm going to say, that we've seen in quite a long time, and we'll get into them in a minute. But
and I think the music and the visuals were amazing. I mean,
that's amazing. What I mean. Yeah.
It really did. I don't know. It just enhanced a very powerful series to have that kind of really moody music, and then these incredibly beautiful graphics.
Yeah, it's collage art. It's actually,
it's collage artists and animation.
Right, but then they kind of degraded into this dark, like rotting away kind of image that I thought was really, really indicative of what these women went through. Mm-hmm. And as this offender revealed his true self, his true nature, I just thought they did a great job.
Yeah, they did. And I think the animation is actually very powerful. And right now I'm working on a true crime animation documentary. And animation actually allows you to reach people, I think, in a different way. And I agree with you, Jim. It's like going through the looking glass, almost fairy tale-esque, that goes bad. And that on its own, just the visuals, paints the picture. Mm-hmm. But just to set this up, I mean, we start with meeting Tracy. And Tracy's basically there with her two daughters, and they're getting her dressed and ready, hair and makeup, and she's talking about dating and that she's going on a date and just how difficult it is to date when you're in your 40s. I got to say, yeah, it is. This is really kind of Dirty John meets Catfish, right, yeah. In terms of the setup and in terms of just what we see unfolding. And we see it in real time, but we don't really understand Tracy's story right from the start. But she's saying looking for love in your 40s is really tough. And it is. And you have to have your head about you, quite frankly. And of course, what we understand from her is that she meets somebody called Mickey, got a match with this guy, and it felt different. She was going on these dates that were fun and he was doting and they went on motorcycle joyrides. And she really kind of paints the picture of just how special he made her feel. And then my heart starts to sink. I don't know about both of you. I try not to be cynical, but when the title's Love Fraud, and I get a sense that we are in Dirty John territory, but of course there is a twist, but I'm not going to reveal that right now. But I think it's one key thing that she said. He said that he loved me and he couldn't stand to be away from me. Whenever I hear these grand declarations, I always feel quite nervous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
What did you think just on the setup? I mean, we didn't really hear.
Here's the thing. The setup was that she met this guy and one, he said he was a pilot. Well, that means that he's probably smart and has money, that he was religious. That means that he's safe, that he owns the company. That means that he's reliable and has money. And he had a motorcycle, which definitely screams excitement, right? So he offered her all of these things just in his profile, right? These are the things, like, I'm not interested in just fooling around. Like, I'm actually into a real relationship. And of course, that's going to lower the inhibitions and lower the walls that are up around women who have been through a lot and who don't want to just be used. They think, wow, I really found somebody. That is a tremendous setup. He knew exactly how to break down their barriers and get right in there. And as you said, very quickly, these pronunciations of extreme love and this is the one and all that kind of thing that we'll see as we keep going on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, along with also what he says right up front, and we hear him, his voice saying, I'm searching for something I've never had before. I'll do anything to be somebody's everything. I mean, that is a very powerful invitation. It's also an aphrodisiac, but in many senses, because he's tapping into really what all human beings, the essence of what we all want in a relationship. But when you're of a certain age, and I am in that bracket, when you're of a certain age, you want and desire companionship and you want love and you want to have a person in your life that's significant. And here's somebody who is appealing using a vulnerability ruse. So he's showing himself out to be vulnerable and to make that person feel so very special. And like you said, Jim, his setup, pilot, reliable, money, I'm a serious guy. Against that backdrop, he builds trust pretty quickly. And then when you get that match, and obviously Tracy felt that there was this match and it was very powerful. And then we hear about the whirlwind and that they move in with each other and they get engaged very quickly.
You know, I live a very specific life where I work and I take care of my children. I work and I pay the bills. That's what I do. And this was so different. It was freedom. It was just fun.
Before we get there, I just really want to set up a visual for Tracy because she's so interesting to me. It was very poignant to watch her daughters getting her ready for a date, putting makeup on her, curling her hair, and warning her, Mom, take it slow. And she describes herself as I'm a single mom, I work, and I take care of my kids. That's my whole life. And you can see she's kind of, she probably doesn't have a lot of time to take care of herself. Her hair is kind of long, brown, kind of limp. And she's, you can just see that, that she doesn't have a lot of joy in her life. So what she says is when she meets, what did he call himself with her, Rick?
Mickey.
That it was all about freedom. For her, it was just such a break in her everyday life. Like you say, Laura, it's like an aphrodisiac. It's like a drug to have this person come into her life, which has been kind of so by the numbers and kind of drab.
Well, let me tell you, I mean, falling in love, and we've all been there, haven't we? It is like a drug. I mean, it's powerful, but you get chemical release as well.
Dopamine,
you get the dopamine, the endorphins, the serotonin. What about oxytocin? People forget about this, but it's, and you love a bit of chemical chit chat, don't you, Jim?
Yeah, there you go.
It's brain chemistry too, and it's a physiology release, and that fun and that matching and this person really seeing her. I mean, that chemical release is happening, and I stand in classrooms all the time and I talk about that physical, chemical, sexual, how powerful it is. These aren't just silly women falling in love. This is someone who's love bombing, who's charming.
Absolutely.
And who's trying to create. It's a strategic game to him to make them fall in love with him.
Right. And this extremely fast ramp up that you were talking about is intoxicating. And because he projects a sincerity, they feel, wow, this is all real. This is all really happening. And the fact is that he's able to, because he's so practiced at this, and we'll get into how many times he's practiced as the series opens up, but the fact is that he is saying all the right things, doing all the right things, providing these women multiple reasons why he is safe and exciting and in love with them, and just going from zero to 180 in like no time. It's just breathtaking. Literally takes their breath away.
At first, the kids kind of go along with it too. Of course, her children are happy that she's found someone because she's been so disappointed by going out on dates, as she says, bait and switch, where a guy looks good on his online profile and she sits down and he has no teeth. And so they're so happy at first. But Laura would say there's maybe something in the back of their mind that doesn't, in their gut, they know isn't right.
Yeah. Do you remember when we talked about Deborah and Dirty John, and she said, I was online dating and he was too good to be true. And my stomach dropped as soon as I hear that perfect partner, too good to be true. They're so complimentary. They're affectionate. Oh, he was Christian as well. And so am I. And suddenly you hear all this matchy-matchy social engineering, which is effectively what predators do to monopolize your perception. And so it is like a hostage taking, Jim, in many senses. People describe coercive control like being a prisoner of war. And that effectively, your perspective is altered and shifted in every sense. And that's the power of falling in love and having somebody who really understands and has a practice modus operandi and does things in a certain way.
So we meet Tracy, and it's a great transition because she talks about riding on a motorcycle with him, and it transitions to a different woman riding on a motorcycle with him, and she couldn't be more different than Tracy. Here's Ellen. Ellen looks like she's in her late 50s maybe, but she's super trim and super well put together. She's got this super stylish short haircut, and her hair is this silvery gray, and she's just a little firecracker, and she is just so excited to have this new boyfriend. And it's the same. She describes all the same stuff. Fell in love with him. He falls in love with her right away.
Yeah. He says things like, well, the first time they talked for 3 hours. And then he would call her, just checking in. I know there's something there. As if he's holding himself back because there's this amazing thing. He's discovered this amazing woman, just really feeding her ego. And literally, this is the way in, especially when you have somebody who's vulnerable because they've had their ego attacked and stepped on and damaged over the years. that person will respond so much better to this kind of treatment. And they were hoping for it all along. And he dotes on her and he says, good night, beauty, because he can't miss an opportunity to feed that ego, to use her ego against her. I'm not talking about egomania. I'm not talking about narcissism on her part. I'm talking about she wants to feel good about herself. And he's helping her do that. And he's doing it for a different reason than he's purporting.
And yeah, that we all want to feel that though, don't we? But if you have someone who sees that that is a vulnerability, then they will exploit it. Particularly, I put it these things down to very personalized acts that are idiosyncratic. Because for me, this is part of the coercive control pattern. He wants to woo, romance, love bomb, control very quickly. So he also has to understand who each woman is. And I think that's what you're trying to get to, Lisa. Is there a victimology here? Well, on the one hand, you might think that this is about a woman of a certain age and maybe they've got a daughter, because that seemed to be a commonality. But actually, it's much more the thrill of the chase and understanding what somebody's vulnerability is and getting to know that. And I think that this for him is very much the strategic pattern, but also the game. And once he understands with Ellen, it's much more about building her up and going softly at certain times, and he's holding himself back. He knows when to push, when to pull. And we hear different behaviors just in terms of how he executes that. That's the idiosyncratic part, all in order to take someone's agency and autonomy and gradually their self-esteem. It's like pulling the rug out from underneath someone that suddenly that real charm offensive ends, and then you see a different type of behavior.
Both with Tracy and with Ellen, he wants to get married right away.
Right.
Right? Pushing the marriage part of it and starts to buy things together, starts to talk about big purchases.
Right. But that's another vulnerability with these women. I mean, they want to be married. And the fact that a man isn't just out there playing the field, but actually wants to engage and get married very quickly because he's so bowled over by them, that they're so unique and so special. That, again, is another level of intoxicating, because it takes away the risk of just dating for a long period of time. And is he going to just date and walk away? When somebody says they want to marry you, the women believe, oh my God, then we'll be together forever. And that's what they want. So he's using that against them. They have no idea what's actually going through his head. The fact is, he's using it not only to get them more vulnerable, to make them more vulnerable, but he's using it so that he can get into their finances. He's using it so that he can get closer and actually indebt them, destroy them. This is an attack. This is actually his way of getting in on the inside. This is his Trojan horse. That's what marriage is to him. I'm going to get on the inside and I'm going to destroy them from within.
Yeah.
And this is the beginning of the end for most of these relationships.
Well, it's a ruse for sure.
Yeah.
But importantly, he doesn't give them any reason not to trust him. I think that's an important part of this. Well, we don't hear it in the show anyway, in the documentary. We don't hear any real big red flags going off. So normally when I'm listening to someone's account, I hear multiple red flag behaviors and I can see in their face that they now recognize if they didn't before those behaviors. But of course, we don't hear that in the setup. And that making big purchases is probably a way of trying to show commitment, but you can bet your bottom dollar it's probably their money, right? That those big purchases are being made with.
Yeah.
But moving in with each other and pushing things on. I have to say also, just another context is when you're in your 40s, and I hear this said all the time, well, it's different to when you're dating in your 20s. When you're in your 40s, and therefore that whirlwind element, people don't see as a red flag anymore. But I'm telling you this, please, our listeners, take your time. If you're listening to all of this and always people say, well, what's your advice? I always say, take it slow. Where's the fire? Don't rush it. It takes a long time to get to know someone. I always say post 6 months, really, you start to see the true person. Don't you think? You start to understand who they are. You see them in different circumstances. why rush the best part of the relationship, which is the getting to know each other and the wonderful kind of romantic part of the relationship? Why brush through all of that? Why not elongate it and enjoy it? And that's not blame or judgment. It's just advice that, having worked thousands of these cases, because people think these are just odd cases that happen here and there, but they really don't. It's not just a dupe or a con. It's much more than that.
I'd come home from work and there'd be gifts on the bed. He would text me and say, "Hey, what are you doing? How's work? I miss you. Do you want to do this tonight? Hey, I'm going to fix dinner." I was in love with him. He made me feel like number one. And I've never had a guy do any of that for me before. Honestly, it was like a golden ticket for me.
The last lady that we just want to mention that we meet in the first episode is Sabrina. And she's just a very sweet looking, she's got blonde hair, kind of a long bob. And she looks like she's just been traumatized by this relationship. And she says that when she met him, she thought he was the golden ticket, that God loves me. And he even got a tattoo of her name on his shoulder.
Permanent.
That's like
reliability.
That's like over, this is for life. Achieving.
Yes, absolutely. And he said, "I love you. I really, honest to God, love you. You're everything I've been asking for." So again, that's that vulnerability that you were talking about, Laura. He presents himself as, she is the one who's saving him. Whereas she's probably on the other side of that saying, "Wow, I really found a genuine man, a man who's going to love me, who actually cares about me and thinks that I am the world. I am making his world. So of course he's going to make my world. Obviously, this is so great." It's just such a horrible way to use someone's emotions and feelings about you. It's just terrible.
Well, and abuse of trust. That's the hardest part, I think, with these cases. It's your sense of trust, your sense of judgment and perspective, and being hoodwinked in this way. And it's actually quite a sophisticated way. And we can talk about it in terms of brainwashing, because effectively it's that. But there's lots of components to it, where he is stripping away who they are and replacing it with much more about who he is.
Right.
They're joining their lives so much so, "I have a tattoo of your name. It's so permanent. Your heart resides with mine. Our souls are connected." All these kind of really powerful declarations so early on. Really, really worrying.
But another really powerful part of his con is that he says that he's going to be coming into millions, that he's got a lawsuit from some malpractice that was done to him. So they're going to be millionaires soon. And that kind of lets them feel good about making big purchases,
right?
Sports cars, condos, houses, all that stuff.
But Lisa, the way he does it is what's manipulative. He low-keys it. He doesn't make a big deal about it. He just says, "Oh, I don't need it, but this is going to happen." Mm-hmm. And the fact that he says he doesn't need these millions implies to them that he has millions, and that this is just a small addition to his wealth. And the fact that it's hanging out there, it's that dangling carrot that's used so often in frauds, in cons and ruses, and where people, they try to exploit this on the internet. It's the, "We are going to be fabulously wealthy and you won't have to worry about anything. Let's celebrate. Let's celebrate by buying a sports car for us. Just put it in your name. And let's buy a condo or a house for us. Yeah, it'll be in your name. And I don't need it in my name. Just so you'll understand that I'm not trying to take advantage of you. Put it all in your name. It's fine. Don't worry about it." And of course, what does that mean? It means, if and when he walks away, they owe this money. They're the ones on the hook for it. They're the ones who are going to have to come up with the payments and deal with all the ramifications of being left completely holding the bag.
Yeah, I mean, all part of his toolkit. Three women all say, he said that he loved me 2 weeks after we met, and I loved him too. But I think the three of them all said that they thought it was weird. Now, that red flag, I mean, it's that moment when you have that instinct that you think it's weird. But the challenges with someone so manipulative like this is that he also understands their thoughts about them thinking it's weird. So he can close those things down, just like he did with the money. And some things, it's just very understated. And I think that that can be very powerful. Particularly, you're talking about smart women here. You're not talking about foolish women, people doing silly things. You're talking about smart women who understand dating to a degree. But yes, they want to find love. But he played on their caring side. You know, I don't want to use the word maternal, but they clearly have empathy and huge amounts of compassion as well. And I think it is very, very risky stuff when you hear that, playing on someone's caring nature and their compassion, and then him flipping the script and playing victim. So he actually uses multiple tactics. And that tells me that he's sophisticated in terms of just understanding how you get into someone's head quite quickly. He has a range of behavior, and it is this strategic patterning, and it is part of his modus operandi that he has learned over time. This isn't someone who's just started doing this. It's very clear that there's a whole history here.
But there were times that he could look at you and be talking to you, but it's like he wasn't seeing you. His eyes didn't look right.
So speaking of daughters, you bring up the subject of daughters, where Tracy's daughter finally is like, what the fuck? This is too good to be true. He's rushing to get married. And she does some snooping on her own and tried to find out more about this boyfriend courting their mom. And so Tracy's daughter breaks into his truck, finds all these papers that have all different names on them. She finds pill bottles, and she does something very smart and searches for his name on the internet, and boom. This is the really big part of the documentary. They find a blog. Right. And what is the blog, guys?
Well, yeah, before we even get to the content of the blog, I just want to give her daughter proper credit. She was being protective. She wasn't snooping. She wasn't trying to weasel her way and find things to violate his privacy. What she was trying to do was protect her mother, because she saw her mother was love bombed. She saw her mother was gaga over this guy, and she wanted to make sure, she, because something just didn't seem right to her. And I thought that was an amazing thing to do. And as you said, Lisa, she came up with this blog that is an indication not only of how many victims he's had, but how these victims became survivors and bonded together.
Yeah, I mean, the blog's very important, because it also, for the documentary and in real life, one of the key things I always say is online, offline worlds connect more often than what people think. So the first thing, I agree, the daughter doing the Google searches, checking, that's my one piece of advice always. Trust your instinct, go online, see who that person is. This guy had his own blog dedicated to him by one of the women who set it up. Now, that woman was Lisa. And Lisa actually did get married to him, and she wrote this blog after she married him in 2012. And again, it was exactly how we describe in their relationship, the whirlwind, the gaslighting, the love bombing, the reality distortion, the charm offensive. And she ended up being with him just for a couple of months. And she had the presence of mind to realize something was very off. She froze her accounts and she left him before he got any of her money. Now, that's right. Very important, because that's 2012. And he then changes his MO, Jim, because we know that perpetrators learn. They learn what works and they learn what doesn't work. So that's another important point, because also this documentary is quite amorphous in terms of time and geography. There's no nice timeline that says in 2012 he did this and now we're with Tracy and it's 2015. We've watched documentaries and we've covered them where we've seen the nice, neat chronology, which really helps us. But the point is, there is no nice, neat chronology for women when you're experiencing abuse or when you're investigating that abuse. You have to piece it together. So I quite like the documentary not giving us the sense of when things happened. But for us, as behavioral analysis of what's going on, Lisa in 2012 is actually very important. And her starting this blog brings us into the online world where now other women, because she actually calls to other women, anyone who's had a relationship with him, let me know, contact me. We need to get him arrested. She's actually putting a call to action. And that's the bit I loved about this. Not being passive, refusing to be victimized and saying there's something we can do about this. God love them. Bloody amazing. We need to see more of that, of people collaborating. And I mean that in the sense of not feeling shame when something like this happens to you. But that's another important part that keeps predators out there manipulating others, because they bank on silence. They bank on silence because of the shame and the judgment. Mm-hmm. When stuff like this happens, people feel it's their fault. And I'm so glad that these incredible women spoke out and that Lisa wrote that blog, because it takes us into the space of, we're not just going to sit and let this guy carry on victimizing women.
This guy ripped my world, just boom and gone. And then he just walks away. And I lost everything. I live with my parents. Everyone else my age has homes and going forward in life. I'm stuck.
So in this case, we are going to name him, and we're also going to give you like a physical description of him so you can really picture who this guy is.
And the reason being is that Lisa, not our Lisa, Real Crime Profile Lisa, but Lisa started this blog because she knows there are many more women out there. And I would imagine that there are. Whoever we hear from in the documentary, we know it's tip of the iceberg. So that's why it's important in this particular case that we name him, although he uses multiple names. Richard Scott Smith is one of the most common. And then different derivatives of and aliases, Rick and Scott and Mickey. There's lots of different aliases that he uses, as well as different social security numbers, etc., because we know he's been doing it for a very long time.
Right. And it is the fact that he's using multiple names that is the reason why we should talk about them, because we know that that's an MO aspect. It's learned. He knows he has to change his name in case people try to Google him, in case people try to find out who he is. So he's sophisticated in his con. It is not just an accidental, hey, I'm in and out of relationships kind of thing. It is somebody who knows exactly what he's doing. So please, if you think that you are the victim of somebody who has love bombed you and disappeared and taken advantage of you, check out this website, Google Richard Scott Smith, and perhaps start your own if it isn't the same guy. Because if you're the victim of it, then other people will probably be victimized by the same person, and you can survive and get together and go after the guy.
Exactly. Now we're in the terrain of the register, of why these individuals, serial perpetrators, should be on a register. And that's why this documentary and docuseries really chimes with me, because there are so many women. The Me Too movement, we're kind of still surfing on that. The reason being is that women just aren't believed. And therefore, unfortunately, where we are currently is that you have to. And I mean that in a safe way. You have to be your own advocate. You have to be proactive. And that's what I loved about what Lisa did. She didn't sit back. And okay, she didn't have money taken, but she knew that he had done this to, she had the presence of mind to know that he'd done this to other women. And of course, as I always say, there are many, many other people who won't have come forward. And we know that through Weinstein, through Epstein, through R. Kelly, all the cases that we've covered, Larry Nassar, the gymnast. And that's why, unfortunately, women do have to have their voices heard in a different way. And I'm going to talk about the criminal justice system as we move through the show, because actually it's a symptom of a far bigger problem. And this is where we see gender bias. It's not just about this one case. And we know that through Real Crime Profile. And I know that through all my work that I do. So you've got to be your own advocate. And what I loved about this docuseries is these women weren't waiting for someone to come along to rescue them and it. They decided to proactively move themselves from victim status into survivor status and into we're going to get justice.
Yeah. And they had, as you point out, Laura, I mean, on this website, despite that there's an avalanche of women who are posting and telling their stories and that he's a bigamist, obviously. He's still married to many of them. And he's been accused of financial fraud too, but he has denied that. Yet he always is getting probation when he does get called out on it. When he does get called in front of a judge, the judge is just nothing sticks to him.
No one cares. No one cares because they all look like small, minor offenses, and no one's there to look at the whole pattern of behavior and listen to the women's experiences of what they're saying. Because he's a serial offender, yeah, and there are other offenses in there, but they're not being seen. This is why America does need the coercive control law too, you know, because of this pattern of behavior. And he grooms them, he brainwashes them, he creates the love bombing environment. He does the whole monopolizing perception, taking them hostage. He's omnipotent. That's something else I haven't talked about with coercive control. When the abuser becomes omnipotent, they appear in every part of the victim's life. You know, they may appear at the gym they're going to, and it's all socially engineered, but they appear, you know, they talk to the daughter. And suddenly the daughter's saying, oh, he was texting me, or he sent me a message on social media. They appear in every aspect of the victim's life. And that part isn't talked about enough. So there's so much to coercive control. It's not just a simple behavior to explain, but it is wholly idiosyncratic to the victim. And when women experience it, and I'm going to talk predominantly just about women, because it is much more about the ecosystem that allows it to continue, the ecosystem of patriarchy. And that's what keeps a victim entrapped in the shame and blame and the judgment that when women do report, they're just seen, and particularly in these cases, as, well, there's no real crime here. You were just a bit foolish. You know, you're a bit gullible. And, well, you're married. So what do you want us to do? Well, this is a civil matter. These are all the things, by the way, from real cases that I'm now quoting. This isn't a matter for the police. This is a civil matter. And I can tell you, even with coercive control law right now, in a number of police forces in the UK, 8 out of 10 times when a serious crime is reported, 8 out of 10 times the coercive control pattern is being missed. And that's with the law. But it tells us that training is needed. And that's why a docuseries like this and Dirty John and others that are now incorporating coercive control that happens over time is so important, that we see it on our screens, but people like us, professionals, we discuss it and unpick it. And so this is only episode one. We've really covered a lot of ground, and we've still got more to say. So please come back and listen to our further insight on this amazing docuseries, four-parter from Showtime called Love Fraud. But for now, this is Real Crime Profile signing out. You can listen to RCP on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever platform you listen to us on. And please be sure, if you like what we do, to give us a 5-star review.
Thank you for listening to Real Crime Profile. Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineering by Mike Thal. Music is composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203 866 4107. Or you can go to the website where there's a lot of information and advice that you can follow on www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic abuse, you can call the National Domestic Violence Helpline for free on 0800 2000 247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, shelter or counselling, you can call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, on 214 946 4357. You can also go to their website for further advice or support, www.genesisshelter.org. And there's the domestic violence hotline on 800-799-7233.